life with support from WPFW.
Jazzy Sundays at Anacostia, an 8-week jazz and R&B concert series happening this Sunday, 4 to 6 p.m. in the heart of the Anacostia Arts District at 1234 Marion Barry Avenue. Food vendors will be on site and lawn chairs are welcome. Jazzy Sundays in Anacostia runs through Sunday, September the 7th. Details at anacostiabid.org.
Yo, peace, this is Rod Stars.
Peace, this is G1, and together we're Rubber D.I.s. When we in the DMV, you know we listening to that People Power Radio, WPFW Washington. Your station for jazz and justice. Let's go.
This is a journey. I got so much trouble on my mind. Refuse to lose. Here's your ticket.
He is amazing. I didn't know nothing about
him. I don't want to be like Mike.
Say what you say. Say what?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Before Magic's knees go permanently south for the winter.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo. Young bro.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day or Oscar Robinson.
Flash the dice roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Collision. He is a Tom Thomas, but he is not here today. Our 11-year NBA veteran and man about town who often co-hosts with me on the show, but we got a couple other soldiers with us today, soldiers of justice, familiar voices to the fan base, people we absolutely appreciate and adore. I'm talking about Modi himself, Chuck Modiano. And Coach Kevin McNutt. Let's at first and foremost, how you doing, Chuck?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself, DZ?
I'm doing well, doing well. What about you, Coach?
Oh, man, I'm glad to be here. I got a little beef to pitch with Magic Mike here because rumor was going around that, you weren't going to be on the show because you were on IR last week. But I was so good on the show, and I had Chuck knocking down three-pointers, and Eton was dunking and getting alley-oops. All of a sudden, you're healthy and back on the air again. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Very cool.
You're feeding everybody.
No question. You know, Dave likes to shoot a lot. I'm a true point guard.
You're Chris Paul.
What? No way. You got to do better than that.
Magic? There's only really Chris Paul left.
There we go. Now we're talking. Right.
Chris Paul's older than Coach. So that's the issue there. But, yo, the D.C., quote-unquote, sports team – was big news this week, not just here, but throughout the country because of Donald Trump's intervention into the Washington Commanders' efforts to open a stadium in D.C. with $1 billion of public money, saying that he would interfere with the sale if they did not turn their name back to the racist slur that defined their tenure for so many decades. And so fascinating to me that neither the NFL nor Josh Harris, the billionaire owner of the team, have yet to come forward affirmatively and say, no, we're the Commanders. We're starting a new tradition. So something very gross, very revanchist, very ugly. And let's also not fail to point out that the NFL is bringing the draft to D.C. for some reason next year for the purposes, I think, of the stadium, to kiss up to Trump, all sorts of ugliness going on right now with that. But I don't want to start there because I got a lot to say about it. I actually want to turn it over to Chuck to start. So before we get into the weeds on this issue, Chuck, tell us about a press conference that's happening right now. Just a short 10-minute drive from WPFW HQ that everybody should know about.
Well, thanks, DZ. Right this moment, there is an emergency action and press conference going on at the House Triangle, the U.S. Capitol in D.C., at the House Triangle. And Rashida Tlaib, Doctors Against Genocide, United States veterans, former state diplomats are all getting together to say, stop the forced starvation in Gaza. It's not only that, that's from 10 to 11, but at noon, you'll see people at the Israeli embassy as well. You'll see people at the Egyptian embassy at 11 to 12. And if you want to leave, you could make it to the White House at 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. at the White House, Lafayette Park. There is going to be a rally there as well. There was a rally on Tuesday that I was at. What is it all about? Is that it's hard to say that you've hit a critical point across the genocide, but we've hit a critical point. I'll just give you one idea and a headline from Haaretz. Haaretz is an Israeli media company, and it says it's a killing field, quote unquote. The IDF soldiers ordered to shoot deliberately at unarmed Gazans waiting for humanitarian aid. IDF officers and soldiers told Haaretz that they were ordered to fire at unarmed crowds near food distribution sites in Gaza, even when no threat was present. Just taking orders. Hundreds of Palestinians have been killed, prompting the military prosecution a call for review into possible war crimes. And while that's happening, no food can get into Gaza. UNRWA was defunded, and the Gaza, quote-unquote, humanitarian foundation, which is part of this process, it has been the problem. So every day, there are protests, and then there are protests. There's protests like you're trying to intervene so another child doesn't die in the next 5 minutes. And this is that type of protest. It's not protest like for next week. It's get food in now so a children stop starving and stop being killed, which resemble like the Squid Game or Hunger Games. We say that language, but that is exactly what is going on. And Palestinians and activists have been saying it for weeks, but the difference here now is now even the IDF themselves have admitted to Israeli media that this is exactly what happened as well. So that's where we're at.
Yeah, it's important. Now, two things that are factual are actually would be deemed, I think, anti-Semitic to say on several college campuses, maybe all college campuses in this country. Like, it's factual to say that they are doing a sick kind of target practice against children who are going after food. This is being documented because they're shooting different parts of the bodies every day. And so they're tracking where the bullets are going, and it's literally like it seems like they're competing as to who can get the closest to certain parts of the human body of Palestinians. That story broke through this week. And then another story about people in the press who are in danger of starving to death, just covering what's happening. So those two stories actually broke through the noise this week, and hopefully that will have results for change because it's so desperately needed. Okay, going to this story about Trump wanting to change the name of the DC team back to its racist slur roots. And so I'm just going to say something. I want to try to explain why Trump decided to intervene in this issue with an issue we all thought had been put to bed, particularly this past year with Jaden Daniels giving the Commanders for the first time since the change its own sense of history and momentum. Like, we are the Commanders. We're the team of Jaden Daniels. We're the team that was in the NFC Championship game. And that, to me, I remember saying this on this show, that just put the old name forever in the ground because a new tradition is being built. And here's Trump, for no reason whatsoever, bringing it back. But I'm going to argue there are three reasons. He wants to bring it back to distract, to dehumanize, and to confuse. And I'm just going to break this down quick and then throw it to y'all. The distract and dehumanize parts of this shtick we're all very familiar with. He's trying to distract from the scandal that is still burbling and exploding about his connections with serial pedophile pimp Jeffrey Epstein. And that is a significant scandal for Trump. I'm sure people are familiar. We're not going to talk about it too much here. But the distraction element of him saying, hey, let's talk about football and let me try to make football racist again, the distraction part is real. The dehumanization part is real. What this country is doing to brown and black people suspected of being non-native born in this country, suspected because of the color of their skin. They are taking this racial profiling army known as ICE and harassing to the point of imprisonment, torture, unspeakable brutality, unprecedented in the last 100 years of U.S. history. Let's go 80 years back to the internment of the Japanese to go back to something in this country as vile as what Trump's doing. And you can't get away with that without dehumanization. And putting down this racial slur is about dehumanizing people, particularly in an environment, by the way, where Native American people are getting swept up by ICE and being detained as well. I mean, the sickness of that irony, I can't even get my head around. But the last issue, and this is the one I'm just going to speak on, and I'm going to throw it to Coachy Coach and then Modi, or should it be Modi Modi and then Coach? Decide among yourselves.
Go Coach.
Modi.
But the part that we're not talking about, we're talking about the distraction. Everybody sees it. We're talking about the dehumanization. You'd have to be a racist not to see it, and that it's part of a broader project. But the confusion aspect is the third part, confusionism. And what's confusionist here is that what you're seeing now are a bunch of liberals on the city council and it's trying to say, well, wait a minute. We're not going to change the name. That's where we draw the line. We're not changing it back. If you want a stadium in the city, we got to stay with the Commanders. Let's all get together in an anti-racist unity to say we're not going back to the name. And guess what? That then becomes the debate, and not a debate about the fact that this stadium deal is horrible in its current form for working class and poor residents in Washington, D.C. It is going to starve the healthcare system that exists indigenously under home rule. It's going to absolutely be a waste of money in terms of its inability to create jobs. It's estimated that this billion-dollar public works project is going to be closed 340 days out of the year. Now, what happens then to all the businesses around it that they say will exist when it's closed 340 days out of the year? It's horrible economics. It's horrible for the city. It's a billion-dollar present to Josh Harris. It could be a much better deal, or maybe there should be no deal at all. But that should be the debate, not a debate about the name. It's the confusionism that Trump sows that I think does liberals, leftists, whatever you want to call it, no favors whatsoever. So distract, dehumanize, and confuse the issue. That's what happened this past week. Coach, I throw it to you.
Okay, I'm going to throw it to Chuck here because I have a list of questions that I want to hit you with, Dave. And Chuck, I gave Magic Mike his moniker, Magic.
Yeah.
I'm giving you, from this moment on, and I'm saying this from, in sincerity, I'm also making levity, that's what I do. But in all sincerity, dude, you are a special cat. What you do for this city and on the front lines and knowing what's going on, man, it's great. I listen to you guys every time. If I can't listen, but I archive. You are fantastic, dude. I keep us abreast of what's going on in the streets. So from this day now, your nickname, I got Magic Mike.
Yeah, go for it.
Dave is not worthy of a nickname, so, you know, we don't get along.
You I don't want a nickname from you. I don't want one.
You
got to
be a star. You got to, see, if you're from the city, from the streets, you always have a nickname. That's how you.
I know. I already have a nickname. I don't want a new nickname from you. I already have the best nickname in the world, but please.
Which is what?
What's my nickname? MC Slam Dunk. That's what they call me.
All right, man. Let me throw it to Chuck. Chuck, from this point forward, you are Chuck Street Beat Modiano. You did?
Okay. I'll go with Street Beat. I'll go with Street Beat. That's all right. I'll give the Street Beat.
And so, for that, you talk. Go,
brother.
But before you do, Chuck, I insist on being known by my other nickname if you're going to be Street Beat, Captain Delicious. Okay.
I didn't hear that. That's new to me. Okay, that's new. You know, if we had more time, I would interrogate that. But, but you know, let's talk a little bit of Trump here. This is what Trump does. And you, I'm not going to reiterate all the reasons that you laid out, which are all true, by the way, the distraction and whatnot. He's speaking to his base. So he says outlandish, racist things. He talks about cultural wars. And then he's trying to get legislation here, be a distraction here. Listen, we're talking about this, not the Epstein list, right? He doesn't want people talking about the Epstein list. And you have to understand some, everything you said, liberals, leftists, there's a third category here that many of his own people on the white nationalist right are also turning on Trump. Mm-hmm. They're saying he's not doing what we delivered. We even might have thought he might have been a little anti-war. He's not anti-war. He said he would get us the Epstein list. He talked about it. He campaigned on it. And many of his most ardent supporters are saying, what is going on? We wanted that Epstein list too. You said you wanted to drain the swamp. You're part of the swamp. And it's important to talk about that as well. And the reason it is that when that happens and when some of his own people start to turn on him, he's more likely to say, let's change the name back. Cause that's his calling card to his base. It's his base. So if he can distract his own base and get more people to like him with stuff like that, maybe he's hoping they'll forget about the Epstein list too. And when the more his base might push against him as well, you see this confusion, you see this distraction, you see this racism, you see this bigotry, and he likes to use sports. He likes to do entertainment. He's done this his whole first Trump won. I'm surprised he hasn't said Caitlin Clark yet. Look for that this summer. I'm calling it right now. So this is what Trump does. This is his MO.
Very true, very true. I wonder if they would risk it with Caitlin Clark, because we know she could respond in a way that ruins Trump's day. Possibly. Possibly. But you know, they gotta you know, he's more comfortable in USC than admitting that women actually do play sports and play them well. So a little suspect on that part of the prediction, but I agree with you that for him, sports begins and ends with white grievance. And it's disgusting, and it distorts what should be something beautiful, which is the act of play and competition. It just sickens me. Throwing it to you, Coach. Back to you, sir.
Okay. I'm actually going to do you a favor, Dave, and put some butter on you. And Chuck and Magic Mike know that me, you don't get along too well. But I'm going to do it, Dave, because of your article that you posted was fabulous on this topic. Absolutely fabulous. And a couple of things I noted some things down. You said something. You said if built, the stadium will accelerate displacement and gentrification, hurting residents who could never afford a $400 ticket to a game. You said that. What else did I see here? Where is that? You said that Josh Harris can afford his own damn stadium. You said it's a terrible deal for D.C. That's another quote in your article. And then you said something that if built, and I highlighted the word if, you don't think this thing is going to go down?
I don't think which is going to go down.
The stadium.
I think the stadium will eventually get built. Absolutely. I think there's just too much will from Mayor Bowser, who, by the way, people should recognize it has been aligning with Trump behind the scenes now on a host of issues. Trump let that slip in a recent press conference. The thing that I think is a question is will Bowser accept the name change? All right, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Don't stop there. You can elaborate on that. That was awfully quick.
Yeah, Donald Trump was doing an interview. This was before the Epstein stuff broke, like right before the recent Epstein stuff, I should say. And he was talking about literally about a kind of federal intervention into New York City because, you know, if Zohran Mamdani gets elected, the city is out of control with crime. That's, by the way, not true, but that's always going to be the pretext for sending in ICE. He wants to send in ICE to New York. It was a whole thing about ICE in New York and how over the objections of anybody, there was going to be a massive federal intervention in the city. And then he said, we need that in D.C. too. It's a crime-ridden town. Again, not true. It's a crime-ridden town, but Mayor Bowser has been working very closely with Susie Wiles. Susie Wiles is the person who might be running this country. She's Trump's, I believe, chief of staff now. Yeah. And the fact that Bowser meeting regularly with Susie Wiles, and he said, and things are working out, like a throwaway line about a mayor that as recently as a few months ago, he was practically threatening with arrest. Mm-hmm. I mean, that change on a Democratic mayor of a liberal city, particularly a Democratic mayor whose mentor proudly was Michael Bloomberg of New York City, that makes me very concerned about the terms to which the stadium will be built. Name, no name. It's going to be very bad for the working people of D.C. And that, to me, really does need to be our focus as DMV people, mm-hmm. as we are the people who do this show.
Yeah. And that dynamic is not new with Bowser and Trump and Republican Bowser. When Trump threatened to take to get rid of BLM off the plaza, within days, BLM was off the plaza. When Trump said, get rid of the homeless site, not the homeless site, the tents.
The tent city. Yeah.
The tent city. And there's a 30-day rule in D.C. law that you have to get 30 days notice so social workers could come and you could help relocate even a portion of people. Within 3 days, that rule is broken and the tents went down. Well, last year when there was the encampments in D.C. and they were threatened by the hard right wing, they had a press conference and they said, we're going to have an anti-Semitism hearing next Wednesday, the night before the anti-Semitism hearing. Bowser had MPD raid that campus, beat on those protesters and capitulate. She has a history of every time threatened by the right wing and Trump by actually in advance capitulating. So in effect, doing the right wing's will. And what we know about bullies is bullies don't stop punching you in the face. If they punched you in the face yesterday or if you comply, they threaten you yesterday, another threat's coming tomorrow.
Can I ask a question there?
Yeah.
What, and all that I know of and the people know, but I guess we kind of looked at it, what leverage does she have to fight back? When he says get rid of BLM, what could she do if she says no? You understand what I'm asking?
You know, it is a question. You do have less power in D.C., but it doesn't matter what the ask is. And there's no evidence that it's effective either. Because so, for instance, when he said get rid of BLM, I kind of agreed with on some level with her logic. She said we have bigger fish to fry. Federal workers are being laid up. That's more important than this symbolism. That's what she said. And you could like. Say, okay, that makes sense. You could see by giving that symbolism up, and that happened. But then 2 days later, when it was the unhoused encampment and then breaking your own city's law.
Right.
Now what we're seeing is it wasn't just about symbolism. it was, I'm going to do what you say and fight back. Whereas somebody else, and I understand some rules are different, but Marion Perry back in the day would have fought back, right? He would have fought back. We do have a history, people remember the end, but they should remember the Marion Barry who would fight back.
Absolutely.
And do stuff like that. And she is not him.
I got to come in there, Chuck, because two things. One, even if one thinks Mayor Bowser was making a savvy move and saying, fine, we'll jackhammer BLM Plaza so we can maybe cut some better deals on some federal jobs, even if one thinks that that's even the reality of what happened, she didn't have to be figuratively / symbolically holding the jackhammer at BLM Plaza. You know what I'm saying? Like, it felt like she was jackhammering BLM Plaza. It felt very like, okay, aggressive. Like, this is what we're going to do without any real, like, not even like a community debate or something, like something formal. I mean, you are using a jackhammer to fundamentally change a part of the city that was one in struggle. Shouldn't we at least have a discussion about that? So that part I want to raise. The second thing is for people who called it a distraction and said we need to focus on federal jobs, did not understand at all that racism was central to them removing these federal jobs, a way of weakening black workers in this area. So one is the other. And it reminds me of something that Nancy Pelosi recently said on TV, which made me want to throw a rock through my television set, where she said this a couple weeks ago. I don't think she would say it now in her defense, but she said, Democrats should not be talking about Epstein. We should be talking about the dining or the kitchen table issues that are affecting their lives. And I'm listening to this and I'm like, if you don't bring down Trump, there won't even be a kitchen table, let alone food on the kitchen table. So what are we talking about here? Like if the agenda is not a political attack on Trump, so in order to regain some sense of what we have lost, then what are you really even doing on Capitol Hill? So it's like these symbolic things for Trump always have real world repercussions. They're like trial balloons that he puts out there to see if anybody's going to stand up. So, and Mayor Bowser did not stand up to the jackhammering, and people should not see that as disconnected from his racist attacks on home rule and district workers. That's what I got to say about that.
And it never stops. I think that's because she asked a really good question. It's a good question, but if the thought was that you're cutting a deal and the deal worked, right? You cut this deal so this won't happen. That's a little bit different. Trump has shown that you don't really cut deals with Trump. He bullies you.
Yes.
And if you give in, he bullies you more. So like that's his history. There's no end point. So he's not someone you're really having diplomatic relations with. And that's what throws a lot of this off. And we see this in pretty much every aspect, that whether he's dealing with the universities, whether he's dealing with the foreign policy, he is a bully. He's a gangster. He will use every single means to take you down and you won't stop.
That's where we are. Coach, we're about to hit the bottom of the hour. We said to Chuck that he would be able to leave to do what is an all-important work call for him, and we all have much respect for Chuck and what he does with his work, so we want to create that base. But, Coach, you said you had some thoughts, maybe even some questions or two. Anything else you want to add about Washington Commanders football, the stadium, Josh Harris, Trump, and the like?
Well, the last thing, I also wrote this down, what D.C. Councilmember Charles Allen said. In stark financial terms, at a time when the district is facing a recession and tens of thousands of workers are losing their jobs, this proposal is asking D.C. residents to pay more than $4 million for each and every home game for the next 30 years.
Jeez.
Mm. A proposal that doesn't even include funding for a sorely needed metro station expansion to give people alternatives to driving.
That is really important, because one of the things about the stadium plan is to build a massive, unprecedentedly huge parking lot. Now, what does that tell you? One, it's a horrible eyesore. It's very bad for the environment. You're taking away trees that provide shade for people, provide shade for this earth, making the earth hotter by building that. And the second thing is that, to me, it gives the game away. We want people from Northern Virginia at this stadium. We don't want people from D.C. because they're not improving the metro access to the stadium. Sorry. Go on, Coach.
No, that was a quote. As a matter of fact, I was riding by the stadium yesterday, and I just said to myself, with all they're talking about and how big this is supposed to be, are they even going to dam up the Potomac? I mean, I was crossing East Calvert Street Bridge. Mm. The project seems so massive, and I was thinking about, you know, Layson Golf Course might be in trouble. I don't know, but it just seems so massive, and I'm just looking at the neighborhood and saying, good gracious, you know, like you said about gentrification and displacement. So I don't know, just as you can see, my city, and I'm just confused, like you said, in your opening.
Yeah, listen to Charles Allen. I think he's really got this, and I think putting it in terms of the cost per game, I think was actually very smart. I've never heard anybody do that before, because sometimes these numbers seem so astronomical that they're just unrealistic to the citizen. But when you say, wow, our taxes, $4 million in our taxes, which, by the way, have been raised to pay for this thing, at a time where they are cutting what's called the DC Health Alliance, Coach, which is a really important healthcare program for people who make slightly above Medicaid rates.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is for the working poor to have healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to lose that for a stadium that Donald Trump wants to turn into a monument of racism. So hip, hip, hooray. Let's go to break right now.
Did Chuck leave?
No, I'm going to give one quote, and then I'm going to be out.
Okay.
And we'll go to break.
Gotcha.
Okay, that's from your article, DZ, at The Nation. The name change would also help erase the ways that the 2020 George Floyd demonstrations pushed corporate power to reevaluate their own racist practices. Trump's followers want to eradicate any legacy of the largest demonstrations in the history of the United States and the movement's efforts to dismantle institutionalized racism. I'm glad that you mentioned that, because many things came out of those protests that weren't specifically about police, but those protests impacted. So thanks on that, and I'll catch you all next week.
Three beat.
Before you go,
yeah,
I can't let you go because Magic Mike sent me two things over text that I want to respond to. They're both very important. Mike, is it okay if I read your text? Is that cool?
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah. The first is they're both very good points. The first is Josh Harris has already made it clear several times that he will not change the name back, and we are now the Commanders. That is true. What I'm waiting for, though, Mike, is an affirmative statement post-Trump statement that
just
says,
to be honest with you, if I already made my statement as the owner of the team, I wouldn't pay no attention to that. I would not give any attention to what Trump has said, because I already said what I said.
I think you got to go affirmative, because now he's not only saying if he was just saying let's go back, I would agree with you, Mike, 1,000%. But since he's saying I will scuttle the new stadium if you don't turn the name back, he said that explicitly. No stadium.
But you have
deal.
To understand that he really doesn't have the power. Congress has the power of that land, and they would have to approve it. So he's doing what he always does. He just talks out the side of his neck.
But Congress has literally abdicated their power of the purse. If Trump wanted to do this, I don't think Congress would blink. I really don't.
I know, but he doesn't have the power. We have to be 100% on point and factual when we're reporting things, because Trump doesn't have the power. Technically, Congress does.
I agree. I agree that technically he doesn't. I just think the technically aspect has been covered in gasoline and set on fire.
I mean, that's true. I can't argue with that.
He just ended the Department of Education. There was no vote in Congress. Congress has the power of the purse.
You better watch out, because with these new revelations, man, he might try to end the DOJ.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, and you know, no, but that's the, you, that's a, listen, Chuck, I'm listening, Mike. That's my whole point, though. Like, he wouldn't have to end the DOJ. The DOJ would say, we are going to end ourselves because are an affront to Donald Trump. You know, it's like there's just this abdication happening around him that makes me very nervous about things like this, because you're correct about the power of the purse. I just feel like it's been abdicated, and we've seen that time and again.
And to be honest, I mean, really, if Trump does that, you know, I mean, do you really think Josh would change the name, or he would say forget Washington? I mean, this is all speculation, but would he say forget Washington and let's go to Maryland or Virginia?
That's a great question. I just feel like a lot of people, Mike, who I felt like would have stood up to Trump at this time, and I'm talking about the powerful, like publishers of newspapers, presidents of universities, billionaires, tech billionaires, to see all these folks bend the knee, it's just hard for me not to say, is Josh Harris even that special?
Well, that he would. Only time will tell.
Yes, only time will tell.
And let's go to that second text.
Oh, yeah, the second one's important, too, only because I just heard something different. But if this is what's going to happen, I'm very happy. Mike texted that they're actually going to be building a small garage with very little tailgating because they will not have enough parking, which is the opposite of what I said. And, Mike, I want to say I heard the same thing, but that's why there's now this big push to even push it out more.
I've listened to a lot of people talk, council members, a lot of people talking, and there's truly, truly not enough space to put 22,000 parking spaces like there is at Northwest Stadium. They're only going to put 8,000 spaces, and that's a combination of garage and outdoor parking.
Oh, I pray you're right. I pray I'm just hearing D.C. City Council people whispering stuff to me to get me agitated. I'll be following up with them. But if they wanted to agitate me, mission accomplished. Let's go to break right now.
Let's go.
We'll be back right after this. We're going to let Chuck go, and then Coach and me have to talk about some very, very serious NBA going on. Thank you for joining us, Modi. Love you, man. We'll be with you next week, and we will be back right after this short message here on WPFW's The Collision, your home for jazz and justice.
No way you can get enough of me. Yo, Mr. The overweight prince, dominator MC, heavy D constant weight gainer. And since I choose to wait, not to lose, I will stay this way so that I can move. MCs around who front and cry. You go round for round, I go pound for pound. At the end of the party when you're singing your night, you come to me and say, take it like I'm your Mr. Mister.
We're back here on The Collision. Love that. Mike, tell us that track, because you know that's
Heavy
my jam.
Heavy D missed the big stuff, bro. When this first came out, man, I was amazed when this came out.
Chunky but funky. And, you know, no disrespect to the Fat Boys, because they were pioneers and they did so much. And I think Can You Feel It, Prince Marky D, these are geniuses. That being said, when Heavy D stepped up with that sort of bigger body and flowed with that flow, it felt like we had shifted from the Fat Boys.
It was a swag, too. I mean, he was on a whole different, you know, a whole different tip than the Fat Boys. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. Exactly. It had that sense of elevation. And also the beats were just fantastic, the production. People should check out the remix of You Can't See What I Can See, which to me is an all-time.
Rest in peace, Heavy D.
That's peak Heavy D. But throwing it back to you, Coach, I know there's some NBA goings on that you have feelings about. And believe me, I do too. Believe me. Especially when there's a player who just signed with the Clippers who's older than you by the name. So go for it, Coach. What you got for me?
Well, I need a little clarity, and Magic Mike does too. You said when you saw Nancy Pelosi on your TV and what she was saying, you wanted to throw a rock at her. You have rocks in your house instead of furniture? I didn't understand.
Well, you know how it is, Chuck. I've got my precious rocks collection that I keep behind glass in the living room. So I would have gone for maybe a nice, you know, maybe a granite, a rare granite.
Okay.
On there. Sorry, I'm quite the rockologist.
Okay, buddy. If you say so.
Maybe volcanic, maybe sedimentary. I was trying to figure out which rock I wanted to use.
All right, okay.
Please go ahead.
Okay, I just want a little clarity on that. So Bradley Beal goes to the Clippers, and I guess Phoenix paid him to leave. So, you know, I mean, so now you got Beal, you got Harden in the backcourt until they got Paul, who's 81 years old. But by the way, he played every game last year. He played all 82 at 39 years old. So
one of only 12 players to do that in the entire
league. Yes, yes. Well, is he 39, 40, or 41?
What is 40.
40, okay. And that's an amazing stat to play an 82-game slate, man, especially with, you know, load management and all this thing. Congrats to him. But Beal and Harden in the backcourt, you might even score a bucket. And you're just a 5'7 center from the Bronx or, you know, Manhattan or wherever you're from. I mean, that's a terrible
5'10. Defensive. 5'10. Go ahead. 5'10.
That's a terrible, terrible defensive backcourt. And I'm just going to say it. I don't think Beal's a winner, man. He is the face of all the folks that say these guys really don't care and it's all about a paycheck.
Very interesting. Very interesting. You know what? I'll put it right now. Give me the Clippers as the greatest opposition to the Oklahoma City Thunder in the West getting to the finals.
Elaborate, please.
I am all in on this Clippers team, which really should have beaten Denver in the first round. The only reason they didn't and move forward with an incredibly deep, talented squad with Kawhi Leonard being healthy. Yeah, the only reason they didn't is because James Harden did one of his typical Game 7s. Which has always confounded to me that somebody that good plays that bad. I've never seen anything like it, where you can almost pencil in a 2-for-13 game.
Correct.
With 5 assists and 6 turnovers when the lights are the blue. I've never seen anything like it. Like, I would challenge anybody to name anybody. And if Jerry West was Mr. Clutch, I mean, James Harden is Mr. Flush.
Right.
You know, and I don't mean a flush like in poker.
Right, right. So, I understand.
Yeah. So, but having Chris Paul, who statistically coached with advanced analytics in place, although Tyrese Halliburton may beat him on this, but Chris Paul is the best clutch player of the last 20 years.
Is that a fact?
If you look at the issue, if you add assists, and you say points or assists to go up one or tie the score with 2 minutes or less to go, no one touches Chris Paul.
Wow.
No one touches him.
Right.
And I think and he's also had some bad playoff games. I don't want to front on that. But I think Paul there steadies it. Bradley Beal. I mean, they're just a better team than they were a year ago. Brooke Lopez, Bradley Beal, that kid John Collins, I call him a kid, he's 28, that's a kid for this team. He's older than like almost every member of the Thunder, and he's their kid.
Right.
But they're going to have 11 legit NBA players. No projects, no rookies, 11 dudes, which you're going to need for an older team. And Bradley Beal, everybody clowns on Brad, we all know him well in D.C., the worst contract in history that will be his legacy. But that being said, even in that maelstrom of awfulness in Phoenix last year, dude was 18 points a game, 40% from three.
When he played.
Okay, when he played. I think it's a great addition to the team. I still own property on Bradley Beal Island. I am not selling that property at this time. Granted, in the Phoenix era, there were terrible hurricanes, which damaged Bradley Beal Island. But my property remains standing and firm. I love what the Clippers have done. I know everybody's saying the opposite, but sign me up for old man ball.
And you are taking them over the Thunder, coming back with 15 guys on their roster.
I did not say over the Thunder. I said they are the greatest threat.
Okay.
Yes. I don't think it's Denver. I don't think it's I certainly don't think it's the Lakers and the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, Luka Doncic, and LeBron James. I'm 40 years old and I still act like a petulant teenager, James.
Right.
I don't see it. Although I will say this about LeBron, though, and the sort of rumblings that he's trying to nudge his way to a better opportunity to chase a ring. How can you do that given that your son is on the team and was only drafted and given a guaranteed 2-year contract for you? Are you really going to leave him alone?
Well, and that's why I didn't give any credence to that. But let me just finish up. So you say you like the Clippers' chances of dethroning the Thunder more than Houston, too?
Yes. Houston, I think, is a wonderfully fascinating team. I just still think that they're just a wee bit too green. And where is the evidence that Kevin Durant is some great leader? I love Kevin Durant. I do.
So do I.
He's from the area.
Right.
Hometown forever with this guy. One of the 15 best players in NBA history, and I'll stand with that. And might go down as one of the two best offensive players in NBA history, right behind you know who.
Kareem, let's be clear.
No. The things that Kevin Durant can do came down from another planet. I'm sorry, and you know I love Kareem to death, but we're talking about an alien from another world in Kevin Durant. We're going to realize after he leaves how special he was and how weird his career has been. And the reason why it's been weird is he does not like the I'm the best player, therefore I am the leader part of being on a team. And I think when you combine that with some really young dudes on Houston, I don't know. I'll go with the Clips.
Couple things there. First of all, you said he was top two scorers of all time. So who's the number one?
From North Carolina, sir, number 23. I don't put Wilt there because, you know, his greatest competition, a person who, you know, I revere with all my heart, Bill Russell, was 6'9", 210 pounds. And Bill still took him in all the finals.
Right.
I just can't put Wilt there.
Okay.
But I will put KD.
Okay, and I'm just saying, and this is where I'm the old man here, because you obviously did not see Kareem up close and personal. And just because he's 7'2", and yes, you have to get the ball to him, but this guy was incredible. And he, as you know, he has the greatest name for the greatest shot of all time, the sky hook. You guys are missing a boat when y'all say that. And Durant's good from 30, and he's changed his game to he's really not an inside scorer. He can. He's gotten more into the post than he should.
We need to talk about that real quick.
But I also want to get back to the leadership thing.
Yeah, let's get back to the leadership point, because I do need to throw in, though, that you know me for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know that my Kareem love is unparalleled.
Right.
I have had him as the number one player of all time, and I still sometimes think that on my list. So there is zero disrespect from Kareem coming from me.
Right.
I just think when you're talking about an offensive package – I think Kevin Durant is mind-boggling, and we don't even realize it. But go ahead, please.
Okay. So on the leadership thing, because I hear this about not being a leader and all this kind of stuff. He went to Golden State, and he won two titles and was an MVP in both. So you gotta. That's not leadership.
I'm so sorry, but while Kevin Durant's play with Golden State was otherworldly, I'm so sorry to say this because I totally sound like a cliche. I sound like somebody on a darn TNT set. But he joined a 73-win team. They replaced Harrison Barnes, who started on a 73-win team, something that I still can't get my head around, with Kevin Durant.
Okay.
Like, we're going to place an underachieving small forward.
Okay.
But maybe the fourth option at best on offense with the second best scorer, arguably, to ever live. That's how much leadership did he need?
How much did he need is not the issue. The question is, was he a leader? That's, you won two championships, and he was the MVP. How is that not leadership? I don't care about Harrison Barnes or what you're trying to say, there's a trade for Harrison Barnes. The fact is, he came, he led, they won, he led. Where's the lack of leadership? I don't understand.
Coach, because he was able to do, and this is why he should have stayed at Golden State. Because he's not a leader in the way we understand leadership traditionally on a basketball team. But what he can do is make buckets like nobody other than MJ. I keep going back to that point. And guess what Golden State has? Two of the greatest leaders of their generation on that team in Steph and Draymond. And my feelings about Draymond are well known. Don't like him, think he's a bully, etc. That being said, he is unquestionably a presence, a voice. He sets a tone. Steph, I mean, two guys who will retire as Golden State Warriors.
Right.
That's what he joined.
So wait a minute. Okay. So he led by example. He's the MVP of two championships. So what do you want? What is he not showing you to call him a leader? He's not saying, hey guys, you know, he's not screaming and hollering during a huddle or during a timeout.
It's not about screaming and hollering, because for the last 3 years, he has put up mighty stats in Phoenix while looking like I used to look in eighth grade when the big kids would steal my lunch money and pull my pants down.
Move on. I'll leave that one alone. Don't throw me softballs.
We'll leave
that
alone. We're talking about, you know, the quick shorts pull down. A lot of bullies at my school. The point is that, you know, he looked sour for 3 years in Phoenix, making a ton of money and filling up buckets.
But that
team underachieved dramatically. Now, I don't put that totally on him. That was awful roster construction.
There you go. That's what I'm trying to say. And that's where I'm going, because he left Golden State, and I would say maybe because he's a very sensitive guy, and he just wants the ball because of Steph's town, so he moved on. And then going to Brooklyn, I mean, that was Harden and Irving when he was out there saying the world is flat and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, why? This is, you left Steph and Green and a championship team because you want to do your own big three? That was just a bad business decision. Then he goes to Phoenix with Booker, who I think he's a special cat and is underrated. And then you bring Bill in here, who's a career loser to me. And I don't know
about his commitment.
He stays on his shelf, half the season. So that was ugly. And you're saying, well, now he should have been a leader and taken that team to what, 60 wins?
I don't know. No, maybe the second round of the playoffs. That's okay. Not asking too much from the second best player of all time.
No, on that team coming out of the West, yes, it was.
He had three players. So I don't think so. I don't know.
And you still haven't told me what I gave. There's leaders by example. That's what he did in Golden State. You're talking about, well, no, everything he had all the bells and whistles with him. Okay. But then now he goes to Phoenix with a facade. I don't think that was a real good squad because of roster construction. So I don't understand. I'm still searching for you to define leadership. He led by example. Some guys just lead by example. They're naturally quiet types.
I agree. And you know who's one of those guys who's a naturally quiet type who leads by example?
Go.
Wardell Stephen Curry.
And I'll give you another one. The Clippers, the cat that won the title win with Toronto.
Yeah, Kawhi Leonard.
So is he not a leader?
She is. You know who's not a leader? Go. Kevin Durant.
We're still back there.
Yeah, you're doing a great job naming other quiet leaders. And, of course, I do believe there's such a thing as quiet leadership. Of course I do. But I can't believe in Kevin that Kevin Durant meets that threshold. I think his career has been weird. I think a big what-if, Coach, is, and I'll leave with this, I think that if life had taken a different turn, Kevin Durant plays for 20 years in Seattle, becomes an icon, and becomes the sort of person associated with a city the likes of which we rarely see in this country in sports anymore. Instead, gets to Oklahoma City after his rookie year in Seattle because they stole the team. And the rest is a very, very, very unfortunate history of a career that I think could have been more than it was.
Okay. That's interesting because now you're telling him, if he stayed in Seattle, you're telling me he has the qualities to be a leader. But for various reasons, you're saying he's not using those qualities to be a leader.
I'm saying Oklahoma City messed up. Yep. I'm saying Oklahoma City messed him up like it messes most people up who have to live there. Just one of the worst places in this country. Well, that being said.
That wasn't fair. That wasn't fair. But
I'll just end with that. I'm glad Atan's not here. He's a very different opinion.
About that. So
yeah. We'll just leave that way. I love Tulsa, Atan, I swear. Just not Oklahoma City. I love Tulsa. Although Tulsa's got its problems too, as Atan would say if he was here. But enough talking for Atan. Coach, thank you so much for joining us this week.
Anytime, my brother. Love you guys.
Love having you here. Magic Mike, bless you as well, sir.
Peace, everybody.
And best to y'all, Chuck Modiano. Love you.
Street Beat Chuck.
Street Beat Chuck. And don't forget me, Captain Delicious.
Not Harley.
Don't forget, Dave.
Don't hear that from me, baby.
Stay frosty, Dave.
All right. Everybody out there, be frosty.
Oh, my.
Your project put on hold in the real world. These just people with ideas.
Are you in the process of writing or updating your will, trust, or estate plan? We invite you to consider adding WPFW as a beneficiary through a charitable bequest. Bequests can take many forms and are usually the largest and most impactful gift a donor will ever make. Your bequest will help to ensure the programming WPFW has provided for almost 50 years will continue into the future. More info available by email at plannedgiving@wpfw.org or by phone at 202-588-0999, extension 344. Or you can let us know you've already included PFW in your plans through those same channels so we can add your name to our growing list of legacy listeners. We are listener supported. We are Jazz and Justice. And because of your support, we are WPFW.
African Diaspora International Film Festival, Africa World Now Project, and GWU Africana Studies Program present the 18th Annual African Diaspora International Film Festival, D.C., August 1st to the 3rd, featuring a film on Walter Rodney, films on Black musical traditions, and more. Receptions and Q&As, ADIFFDC, from August 1st to the 3rd at the GWU Student Center. Tickets and schedule at nyadiff.org or at 212-864-1760. ADIFF, where Black Lives Matter. WPFW, building a better world one broadcast at a time.
The Birchmere presents Hiroshima, July 24th, Sheila E., July 30th, Switch, August 10th, and Jazz, Funk, and Soul, featuring Jeff Lorber, Everett Harp, and Paul Jackson Jr. on August 13th. Details at birchmere.com.
Wondering how to get WPFW swag in your life? I don't dare say I support Jazz and Justice without saying a word. We've got you covered. Details and browsing at WPFWFM.org. Again, that's WPFWFM.org.
From August 3rd through the 16th, during our summer pledge drive, we present WPFW, 48 Years of Centering Blackness. We'll commemorate Black August and celebrate not only the freedom fighters, political prisoners, and those who have perished in the struggle for Black liberation, but also the scholars, musicians, and poets whose work has served the Black liberation struggle. There are forces working to erase the contributions and significance of Black people.
Your contribution ensures that WPFW is not erased and that the voices of Black people throughout the diaspora continue to be platformed here. Donations can be made anytime at WPFWFM.org. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Hello, WPFW listeners. Summertime is here. Words, Beats, and Life has the event for your family and friends this season. The second annual DMV Made Festival is happening Saturday, July 26th on the National Mall, a one-day celebration of the D.C., Maryland, Virginia region, promoting the intersections of arts and culture, plus health and wellness. With live music by Go-Go Legends, EU featuring Sugar Bear,